Good morning, everybody. It's so good to be here. I'm really grateful for the opportunity. Thank you, Elaine. I want to start first by saying that my prayer is that the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart would be pleasing to God. And I also want to introduce myself, just so you know a bit about me and where I am coming from. Again, my name is Erin Oxford. I was born and raised in this city, in Toronto. I have one brother who is 4 years younger than me and married with three children and amazingly lives on the same street as me and my family, which is rare in the city, so I'm very grateful for that. I'm married to Dion, who for many years worked with the Salvation Army and helped to found the Gateway, which is a men's shelter over on Jarvis, at Jarvis in Richmond. And we have a daughter named Kate, who recently turned 17 and just put in her university applications. So we're sort of sitting on pins and needles waiting to hear about that. I am no stranger to struggle in my life. Dion was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis when we were engaged and we're about to celebrate our 22nd wedding anniversary. So our whole married life has known this sort of invader, which I really do think MS has been for us in many ways. It's also meant many beautiful things, but it's been challenging. My father, who I had a complicated relationship with, very loving but complicated, died very suddenly and unexpectedly many years ago now. My parents were no longer together. My dad actually left my mom and my brothers, though he was around. And so that was difficult. And then my mother lived in hospital for 13 years before her death. Just about 2 years ago. So I have found myself in the position of caregiver for some of the most foundational people in my life. And then along with that, I've chosen kind of caregiving as my vocation. So I am currently the pastor and director of the Dale Ministries, as Elaine described a bit earlier. We were formerly Parkdale Neighborhood Church, and before that, Parkdale Baptist Church. There have been many connections to Waumur along the way, actually. And so now, right now, the Dale is nomadic. We don't have a building of our own, and that's been the case since 2012. So instead, we choose to partner with a variety of buildings in our neighborhood and be outside. And that's actually where many of our community members reside. So the core community of the Dale, many of us are dealing with being underhoused or maybe housed but kind of right on the edge of things. Many of us are dealing with addictions, but they really range from substances, so street drugs, to alcohol, to television, to social media, whatever it may be. And also many of us are dealing with diagnosed mental health challenges, again, ranging, right, from anything from anxiety and depression, which so many people know in their own lives, to paranoid schizophrenia. So while we want to say that our core is made up of those who sort of are quite marginalized in a variety of ways, at the same time, we want to say that we are all alike and that for some people, they know things a little differently than others, but we are more alike than we are different. And so I want you to know that I am aware of the challenges also that you have faced here as a community and continue to face, I understand. I feel a kinship with you, having experienced our own challenges in Parkdale, particularly in 2012 when we had to make a really difficult decision to give up our building. We gave up what was a leased space, so a little different than what you have here, and really did become a church without our own walls. We still call ourselves that. I remember well the conversations leading up to that decision about our identity, our community, our mission, our neighborhood. I remember the grief and the tears. I remember the fear and the courage that we were invited to find in that. And so as I thought about being here this morning, I kept thinking that what I wanted to say was that you are not alone. It is a Sunday at the Dale. We meet in the sanctuary of an old and very beautiful Anglican church. I usually describe the group of us who gathers as a motley crew. And on this particular day, that holds true. A woman of small stature with a too big coat comes asking for coffee and money. She feels her needs really desperately and asks everyone to contribute. A man with a guitar in a bundle buggy arrives to help with the music. Another is painting a large canvas in the back left pew. A person who slept outside the church in a makeshift tent has come in to get warmed up. Two young men from Germany, who are here as our interns, arrive and greet everyone they see. A distinguished-looking couple sit in the front pew, going over the scripture passages for the day in their native Arabic. They have fled Syria and found home in Parkdale. There is a small group of children running around and playing hide-and-go-seek in the corners of the building. As we settle into our time together, a time that is set apart for the purpose of worship, a few things happen. The woman in the too big coat shares how what she is really desperate about is the estrangement from her children. The man painting talks about his dream of getting out of the cycle of poverty that his family has been in for generations. A few express that the kind of vulnerability shown here is new and good and scary. One person says that they are simply grateful to have gotten out of bed. Another is grateful for clean clothes. Our refugee friends express longing that Syria might experience peace. Each person I have described comes with their own story. I come with a story. All of our stories are messy. They include moments of joy and gratitude alongside moments of sadness and real suffering. Many of my friends at the Dale wear the broken parts of their story very close to the surface. So close that it's really impossible for them to hide it, even if they wanted to. Whereas I might be able to have the capacity to suppress or push down those things and have it not be as visible. For instance, addiction can be very hard to hide, as is living on or close to the street. In a way, by so openly sharing themselves, these friends give me permission to share in the same way and remind me that we are all weak, fragile, and broken beings. As we acknowledge this, we can develop relationships marked with a unique transparency and agree to messily journey together toward deeper wholeness and healing through God's transforming grace. So here again, these words from 2 Corinthians 12. Three times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me, but he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. These are the words of Paul, someone who did know pain and weakness, who talked about having this thorn stuck in his side. I want us to take a look at this passage today as we consider what it means to accept that the invitation to Christ's table does not require that we have our lives perfectly together. In fact, it is when we realize we are all broken that we can fully experience what it means to have Christ stand before us and with us. This is not an easy truth. Many of us at the Dale struggle the most with the idea that grace might extend to each of us in this way. I once had a friend who very excitedly announced that he had invited Christ into his heart, as he put it, only to ask him the following day to leave because he didn't want Christ to reside in as dirty a place as his own heart was. And that broke my heart at the time. In 2 Corinthians 12, Paul describes the thorn in his side, the one that he repeatedly asks for God to remove. Interestingly, Paul never claims that God caused him this trouble. Paul's response to the trouble is to pray to God for God's help. In fact, he prayed a lot about this matter. And we learn that God did not answer the prayer in the manner that Paul had wanted. I can relate to that. This trouble made Paul aware of his weakness, and Paul wanted to be free from that weakness, which of course makes sense. God showed Paul that Paul must depend, though, on God's grace. Paul would know the strength that he needed to deal with these troubles, but that strength would not come from Paul. Instead, Paul would know the strength of Christ, who would work in him and through him. For as long as Paul lived on this earth, he would continue to know the weakness in himself, while at the same time he would know the strength of Christ who was living in him. God made a wonderful promise to Paul, and God makes the same promise to all of us. We do not have to depend on our own resources, such as our strength, skills, intelligence, money. We need instead to depend on God and upon God's grace. All that we need comes from God. We need that promise because our own resources may and likely will fail. The strong become weak. Intelligence does not mean knowing what to do. The rich become poor. The healthy become ill. Though it might not always be easy, we are invited to discover that God's grace does not fail. As we come to experience this grace from God, we get to extend it to others. We all share a need to be appreciated and loved. Often our greatest fear is this: if you see what is broken in me, you will no longer love me. Something beautiful happens when we can stare at someone in all of their humanity and say, "You are loved." My experience at the Dale is one where I regularly witness the transformation that occurs when a person discovers they are accepted and loved, not because of what they may or may not have done or accomplished, but simply for who they are. A beloved child of God. Doesn't mean that this transformation comes quickly or doesn't take, it takes time, but it happens. I believe that compassion asks us to go where it hurts. God has invited me to enter into places of pain, to actually share in grief and weakness and confusion, while at the same time acknowledging my own. The paradox is that when I touch this kind of pain, I also somehow see the light. Hope is evident in the darkness. I feel it urging me forward, restoring joy, and inviting me to express gratitude. I become witness to God's kingdom at work in the here, in the now. In this way, compassion, touching pain, can actually lead to celebration. I also believe that the Beatitudes reveal how God takes the hardest things and makes them sacred. The origin of the word bless, meant to consecrate and speak well of, most often used toward God. We often think of blessing as that thing that comes to us. But scripture says things like, let the name of God be blessed forever and ever in Daniel. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all his benefits, Psalm 103. Viewed through this lens, the Beatitudes reveal how God actually consecrates our grief and poverty. God holds up and makes blessed those who are poor and broken, revealing us as precious and having connection to him. Similarly, when we seek peace, when we show mercy, when we mourn, when we are meek, God is connected to us. There is not an absence of God in life's greatest challenges. Jean Vanier said it well. I think we can only truly experience the presence of God, meet Jesus, receive the good news in and through our own poverty, because the kingdom of God belongs to the poor in spirit, the poor who are crying out for love. The love and support of community gives you the certitude that you are loved just as you are, with all your wounds, and that you can grow through all that. And not only are we loved, but we too are called to heal and to liberate. This healing power in us will not come from our capacities and our riches, but in and through our own poverty. We are called to discover that God can bring peace and compassion and love through our wounds. When someone has lived most of his or her life in the last place and then discovers that Jesus is there in the last place as well, that is good news. In a world with so much brokenness, including our own, how do we possibly navigate the landscape of tragedy and discover the triumph of healing? I think the way is actually through our brokenness, not instead of it or in spite of it, but through it and because of it. I feel like I've been invited on countless occasions in my own life to consider that nothing is wasted on God. God can and does redeem my mistakes, our mistakes. Every sin we commit, no matter how heinous, can be redeemed. God invites us to hand every shameful, horrid thing into his hands. We're asked to make this an intentional act, sometimes multiple times a day or more, every moment of the day, an act that maybe then becomes a habit, which means we have to practice this handing over time and time again to God. I do. It's no small feat to discover your authentic identity as a beloved child of God when you have been battered and broken, sometimes as a victim of trauma or abuse. It's even more challenging to believe that even the sins of others against you or us can be redeemed when we pass them back into God's hands. Pray to forgive yourself and those who have hurt you. Then you can likely and gradually, maybe without even noticing it, become more and more the person you were created to be. The world will tell you, in so many words, that you should avoid your suffering at all costs. We might adopt the societal worldview that suffering is a form of punishment. As a result, we turn away from it, reject our crosses, find ourselves fighting against it in ways that are unhealthy. We might find something to numb the pain. For example, a substance, or food, or an unhealthy codependent relationship. Fill in the blank, really. When my husband Dion was diagnosed with MS, when my dad suddenly and unexpectedly died, when my mom lived in that hospital for 13 years, I had and continue to wrestle with the reality that I was being called to live out redemptive suffering. I think we each have a deep longing for wholeness and healing. Maybe some of us, I don't want to speak for anybody, sometimes I want to bypass the arduous work of entering into the pain. We might rather simply skip facing what hurt us and go straight to the inner peace. If you truly long for wholeness, when I truly long for wholeness, I have to come to accept my own brokenness and allow it to change me from the inside out. Henry Nouwen wrote, "Healing is not a step away from the pain, but a step toward it." What is it about becoming vulnerable to others that is so frightening? For me, it is a fear sometimes of rejection or criticism or ostracism. Our brokenness is an opportunity to bless others, however. If I am practicing the act of handing over my pain and misery to God through prayer, and then trusting he will make whole what has become damaged and shattered, I will also grow in a deeper awareness of the brokenness of others. And I won't want them to feel alone in their journey, just like I don't want to feel alone. What I've learned ultimately is that my very personal and unique form of brokenness is an invitation to accompany others who are suffering their own journey. It's to show them and me that there is beauty and, yes, joy in our sorrowful seasons of life. So when I live as a daughter of the resurrection, I don't shove aside the necessity of the cross, nor do I present suffering as the ultimate end. We have the benefit of knowing the end of the story. We talked about this recently at the Dale after Christmas, like how we often walk around and talk to each other about how our Christmases were, as though it were this event that's now done, right? We don't have to think about it again until next year. And I think that's related to sort of the stuff of Christmas. But what Christmas is Christ coming, becoming flesh and dwelling amongst us. And when we read in John that the Word was with God and was with God in the beginning, we know John talks about the beginning as creation and then Christ coming and being fully human on this earth and then the resurrection, and then we already know that the kingdom is going to come, right? The kingdom is here, but it has not been fully realized. And if we live thinking about that, it probably will impact what we do now. So we have the benefit of knowing the end of the story, that the kingdom will be brought into its full realization. We will have new life. And Jesus will bring us to resurrection through our own brokenness. We can press our wounds into Jesus' wounds. Stunningly, maybe paradoxically, Jesus says to the weak and thorn-pierced Paul, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness." To which Paul responds almost beyond belief, Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. I'm convinced that when we can surrender to God, we are given the courage to accept our own lives in all of their eccentricity and brokenness. As Richard Rohr says, your participation in this gives you the courage to hand back to God the only life you'll ever have. That will be the most humbling and the most courageous act of faith you'll ever live, because what you hand back might seem tawdry and insignificant, but it isn't. It is precisely the handing back that makes it momentous. He goes on to say, I'm just this little Richard creature, this little moment of time that's going to be gone in a few years. I'm so aware of what I'm not and how phony I am and of how I say it so much better than I live it. I have 1,000 reasons to reject myself and hate myself. It's really not enjoyable to grow in self-knowledge because the more you know about yourself, the more maybe you are not impressed. But as long as you're being held and received by God, all shame and unworthiness is taken away. We realize that this little one that I am is what God has always loved, even with all of its imperfections. Once you find this compassion toward yourself, then you're able to begin sharing compassion with everyone and everything. But he said to me, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weakness, so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong." For when we are weak, then we are strong.